Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It'll be different if we just kept on winning games. I think it'll be easy to kind of say that, you know, we're really good. Reality of it is, what, we're 3-6, 3-7. And we have a long ways to go. And this is just the first building block. It's a great win. It's a big confidence booster, and it's something to build on.
That was Taylor Heinicke. We're Grant and Danny. This is The Fan. Gambit DC listener line's open at 800-636-1067. He's coming off his best performance in a month and a half. Can he keep it up against the number two defense in the league in Carolina? We'll go through some of what they do well in a second. I got some Antonio Brown news to pass along, though. His former live-in chef is alleging that the Buccaneers wide receiver obtained a fake COVID-19 vaccination card, per report. The chef alleges that Brown also owes him $10,000. Oh, by the way, just a model citizen. One of my favorites, Antonio Brown. Again, the sad thing about my relationship with Antonio Brown, which is just him doing dumb things and me being furious about it, No one else anywhere seeming to care. He just keeps failing up and getting opportunities to play for winning teams like Tampa Bay. Because Tom Brady loves him for some reason. Tom Brady adores AB. Get you someone who loves you as much as Tom Brady loves Antonio Brown. Everybody deserves to be supported by somebody as much as Tom Brady supports Antonio Brown. Hey, you need a gig? Come on over to New England. Live with me. Booted off the team soon enough. Now I'm in Tampa. Ring, ring. Hey, you need a gig? Come on over to Tampa. Live with me. So if this is true and he got a fake COVID card to show the Bucs, what's the league going to do? I mean, Aaron Rodgers didn't get vaccinated, basically told them all their policies are stupid and he disagrees with them, lied for months or misled people, and got a $14,000 fine. So what's the penalty going to be for Antonio Brown? A fine?
I don't know. I don't know. But probably. Because, again, I don't know. There's no precedent for this, right? You can't go back 10 years ago. What do we do for fake vaccination cards? It's never come up before. This is all uncharted territory. And the CBA doesn't allow for much. So they basically fine CeeDee Lamb as much for wearing socks. Not exactly right. As they fine Aaron Rodgers for basically fibbing for 3 months.
I can't imagine he'd get in a lot of trouble with the NFL. Just to add it to the pile as far as I'm concerned.
Well, but this all fits with Brown, too.
It's just a log to throw on to the flames. Supposedly owes the chef thousands of dollars. Supposedly, according to this guy, got a fake J&J vaccination card. Like, just be a pro, man. You just keep getting chances and you keep acting like a silly goose. I don't suffer fools. I'm sorry. I'll figure it out another way or I won't. But not on my roster. But he got himself a ring, so good for him.
Yeah, so the story in the Tampa Bay Times, it's just amazing. Alex Guerrero, the figure at the center of maybe like this Brady, Belichick.
Yeah, that's the TB12
sort of thing,
guy.
The TB12 guy. Surfaces in this story too somehow. Like I don't know how involved he is, but like at one point he's taking a picture of the vaccination card and he's somehow like a player in this. Whether he provided the card or not or otherwise, I'm not accusing him of any impropriety, but that dude's always just kind of around. Things are happening, and Alex Guerrero is just around.
You have a fascination with Alex Guerrero.
100%.
I like
100%.
if you told me right now, not you, but a caller called in and was like, I'm looking into a crystal ball, and in 4 years, Danny's going to direct a documentary about Alex Guerrero. I'd be like, yeah, I believe that.
If I could get funding.
For some reason, you just...
I can't get enough of it.
Whatever's out there, you read it about that guy.
100%.
What is it about him that you find so interesting?
The greatest marriage in sports history. And that guy's at the center of it falling apart. I care so deeply.
But before they even hated each other and it all fell apart, like, your Alex Guerrero fascination goes back years.
Yeah, this guy's like, don't eat tomatoes. Hey, Tom, if you eat something that's got a skin on it, then you'll never play football again. And so, like, Brady follows this, like, wacky, bizarre science, founds a company, and they're just sort of like, hey, man, take our pills and use our towels to dry your perspiration and drink water with a certain kind of salinity in it, and you'll live forever.
Isn't he also Brady's masseuse?
He's everything. He's just this dude who convinced Tom Brady to do his thing. And Tom Brady, by the way, it somehow works for him. It's unbelievable. If I did this stuff, I would just be dead.
Well, yeah, you were working back from before you ever met this guy. He already had won Super Bowls, I'm pretty sure. And like, was one of the greatest that has ever done it.
So I obviously need to be careful. I don't want to, like, slander the guy, but like, by all accounts. Okay. What I see and what I read strikes me, and this is my opinion.
This is a lot of hedging, but keep going.
A little bit quackish. Just a bunch of ducks getting together and looking for breadcrumbs. All right?
Is he Charlie Conway? Is he Averman? Is he Julie the Cat Gaffney? There's Goldberg over there. Who are they?
He's Ryan Getzlaff is who he is, all right? Saying I'm Mighty Duck. Just seems like utter nonsense. And they founded this empire. And because Tom Brady wins all the time and he's 50 years old, slinging 50 touchdown passes, everyone's like, yeah, I believe that.
Something he's doing is working.
I know. It's incredible. I can't get enough of this. I want to hear about it all. I want so much information about that dude. I need that documentary done. If no one else will do it, I will do it.
I promise you, if tonight, Danny's about to go to bed. He's just flipping through stuff at Netflix, turning off his TV. He stumbles across a terribly produced and directed documentary on him by like some middle school project that was done. You would invest 3 hours into it and just forego sleep.
The Patriots have like a cul-de-sac, right, for their training facility.
By the way, he was in the building.
He was in the building.
He worked his way onto their staff.
And Belichick finally goes, you got to get out of here, you absolute loon. So they put a building like 100 yards down the street from where the Patriots practice. Half the guys, because they wanted to be on Brady's good side, went over there to train and to like not eat certain kind of vegetables.
Well, that's the thing. So, you know, if you're saying he's in this AB story, I didn't see his name, but a lot of Brady's guys like train with him, work out with him.
Yes.
You see this with agents and stuff sometimes where, hey, bring that guy out to dinner. We'll talk to him too. And it happens. You build relationships through your clients that way. It's a wacky bit, but the Antonio Brown thing is just never ends. It's like, well, there's a right way to do things, and then there's another way to do things. And a lot of the time, he chooses the other way to do
just
things.
Just not paying the chef. I guarantee the chef like cooked for him for a year, like didn't pay him for months at a time.
I think my annoyance, you know, I shouldn't even be mad at Antonio Brown. It's actually just that societally, we don't care anymore when people act in an unacceptable manner over and over and over again. Like, I am a believer in good people doing bad things and in bad people doing good things. I do believe that, you know, moment to moment, we all make decisions and nobody's perfect. Like, I get all of that. But when there's just a track record of years of you acting like a clown, then you're a clown. But no one cares about that anymore. There is no level of decorum that is necessary to be supported societally. When Odell Beckham Jr. slapped a police officer on the ass in the locker room at the LSU game, the response was like, oh, Odell, he slapped that guy. Like, what?
Please stop slapping people.
Just walked up and slapped a cop on the back of the butt. Why are we happy about this? Why are we laughing? What's funny about
that? You could just not do that. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Anyway.
Handing all the kids cash. That's what Odell was doing.
So, we'll get more info as it comes out. Again, I don't think this will be a big deal in the league. They didn't care when Aaron Rodgers hoodwinked everyone for months and told them that he did something he didn't, and then publicly questioned all of their policies and said that they were not good. They basically said, oh, really? Oh, wait till you hear what we do to you, Aaron. Here's the same fine Alan Lazard got for going to a Halloween party.
Now take that, Aaron. Hope you learned your lesson. It's less than a fraction of a percent of your weekly salary.
If this was a different player, I don't even know if it would register. But because it's AB, it's just like, yeah, that makes sense.
We have a whole room for AB stuff. It's down the hall.
Right. Grant and Danny on the Fan. So Heinicke trying to respond post-Tampa Bay. He'll be relying upon his offensive coordinator, Scott Turner. Steve Smith was on with Brian Mitchell and J.P. Finley today. And he had some really fascinating things to say about Ron Rivera, who used to be his head coach for many, many years, about Scott Turner. He was not in Carolina when Turner was calling plays, but he was there when Turner was on the coaching staff, and about Curtis Samuel, who he basically just eviscerated. So we'll play some of this audio for you and get your reaction to it. But let's start with Steve Smith on Scott Turner. Let's see what he had to say.
I've been there, and they're all running. I have a interesting take on Scott Turner. Scott Turner only knows one offense. And I've said this before, and people will say, oh, he's biased, he doesn't like it. Man, I'm a football player. I've learned four or five different offenses. Have I excelled in all of them? Some of my, you know, it took me a little bit of time because the wording and how it is complex. But Scott Turner is a really good offense coordinator for what he knows. He knows one scheme. And when you only know one scheme, that could get you in trouble. Because you only going to go back. You have too much film on you. You have film that, one, you can't evolve. You have no new wrinkles that are shocking. And long term, you're always going to fall back and run the exact same stuff. Uh-huh. Scott Turner's offense, Jason Garrett's offense, and a few others are all from one guy, Turner.
North Turner.
They all have been there, and they're all running some type of version of it. And I hate to say it, all those guys are not damn successful in the last 2 years, are they?
Whew. So there's a lot in there.
Yeah.
I'll say it first, just out of the chute, as a general rule, I think Steve Smith has a lot of hot opinions when I watch him on TV. I don't always agree with a lot of them, to be completely frank. Just as someone who watches football and has his own takes and is a critical thinker, like, we're not going to see eye to eye on everything. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I think the guy's everything he's ever said is 100% on point. But on Scott Turner, there's, you would think, some internal knowledge here. You know, he doesn't have to watch the film or do his homework. He was around the guy in some capacity. I don't think he was around him as a play caller or a coordinator. But my first question would be, how many of these coordinators around the NFL know a bunch of schemes? I would think plenty. Do we really think Scott Turner only knows Norv Turner's offense? Do we really think he's been in the league forever, you know, came up the way he did through the college ranks, and that he's only ever known the one offense? I mean, he's been around his dad forever. So I guess you open yourself up to that criticism in the same way Kyle Shanahan did. Would you say he only knows Mike Shanahan's offense? I don't know. But Turner was all over the place. Panthers, Browns, Vikings. Went to Michigan as an offensive assistant. Carolina again, Washington. What do you think? Do you think he only knows the one offense?
It's so hard to say. That's all he's used as 2.25 years. Not even 2 full years, right, as an offensive coordinator.
But every coordinator is only using their offense.
Right, and you add to it and subtract to it. I mean, Kyle Shanahan, when he was here, that's the best comp I can think of. He had an offense and a scheme that was very Kubiak, Shanahan tree, that, you know, zone run scheme, those, you know, the outside stretch plays, that kind of stuff, bootlegs off of that. Well, he had that. Well, then Robert Griffin came and they added a whole bunch of new stuff to it. They're still running a lot of Shanahan's staples. You know, the drift play, all that other kind of stuff that we saw a million times over, but he added things to it, subtracting things. I think Scott Turner is capable of that. But to this point, you know, he's probably run maybe one offense, but that, to say the book is written and that's all it's ever going to be, I don't know. I don't know if that's totally fair. But again, Steve Smith was around him, and I really haven't been.
Yeah, I don't completely agree. I mean, I get the logic, right? He was with his dad 14-16 in Minnesota. The year before that, he was in Cleveland in 2013 with his dad. And Norv in Cleveland in 13 was the OC, and Scott was the wide receivers coach. Then Norv gets the Vikings job, and he brings Scott with him, and he becomes the quarterback's coach. 2017, he went and did his own thing in college. Norv was out of the NFL at that time. And so at that time, Scott Turner went to Michigan and was an offensive assistant. Then Norv got the gig in Carolina in 2018-19 as the offensive coordinator, and Scott was the quarterback's coach then. So it would be logical, I suppose, to say that's the offense he knows. That's the only scheme he knows. But he was in Carolina as an assistant in 11 and 12 when Norv was a head coach in San Diego. That was a different offense at that time that he was a part of. He was a wide receivers coach at Pitt in 2010. Now, I'm not saying that that's a great prerequisite to making the jump to an OC in the league. Obviously, it was 10 years before he got the job. But my point is just he's been around other schemes. He's been around other offenses. So I found that interesting. Here's what he had to say about Curtis Samuel. Start with the shorter cut, Darius, where he basically talked about how he got overpaid and he wishes everybody luck. He kept referencing that he got $70-some million. I don't know why he kept saying that, because he didn't. He got $40 million less than that. But this was Steve Smith today with JP and Brian.
Y'all pay Curtis Samuel $75 million. You know why? Because Scott Turner's comfortable with him. He knows what he's going to get. Y'all overpaid. Good luck. Thank you. Next.
Most of the time, it's seen as a good thing if the OC is comfortable with someone. Part of why I was happy they were bringing Curtis Samuel in is he's worked with the coordinator, he's worked with the head coach, and he knows the offense. He's viewing that as a negative reason why he got paid and they brought him in. But he like I said, he kept mentioning $75 million. That wasn't what they paid him. It's basically a three-year deal for Curtis Samuel.
34.5.
That's going to pay him, $34.5 million. So about $40 million less than $75 million.
If you've got criticism of Rivera and company, where, hey, we're just bringing Carolina up here, I can see that. Where you go, you just happen to know this guy, and that's fine. But he didn't really thrive when you were there. He really broke out when you were gone. But you just happen to know the dude, and that's all well and good. But was that the best possible offensive weapon you could have gotten for that money? That's a fair question, a fair criticism, I'd say.
Fair question, fair criticism. I mean, my rebuttal, and this is just an opinion, doesn't mean it's correct, would be he played really well in their offense.
Yeah, I like the signing, by the way.
Bring him in. I still think he's going to be an asset to them in the future. I think this year has been an utter debacle, and I think they should have shut him down months ago, and they've screwed this up every way from Sunday. But if you look at Steve Smith's resume, he was with Rivera for the first couple years of Rivera in Carolina. But, he was going so hard today, it was clear to me. I don't know if he left on good terms or not. He said some very nice things about Rivera. I don't think he loves everything about that Carolina outfit that he was a part of, I will say.
I don't think so either. I think you're right.
And he doesn't seem like a big fan of Curtis Samuel. This was another take on Samuel breaking down the player Washington signed this offseason who's done very little for them.
I'm just being honest. Like, I have no problem with Curtis. But I'm just evaluating. Mm-hmm. $75 million for you to be the best third down tight end, third down wide receiver, which he was great. But, man, you don't get a parade averaging 46 catches, under 50, 60 yards, and then you're unhealthy. He was hurt when they got him here. Okay, that's fine. But now you suffer because you use all this equity for a guy that isn't going to play, can't play, and when he does – doesn't really move the radar. People aren't shaking in their boots to play Curtis Samuel. Never have, never will. Sorry.
The last point could be true. Saying people, meaning defensive coordinators, have never been scared about Curtis Samuel? All right, possibly. He's talking about you don't get paid for 40 catches. I mean, he had close to 60 2 years ago, and he had about 80 this past year. So he's referencing 45 catches. He had 77 catches last year. 850 yards. All purpose, we've seen him have a 10 touchdown season. So I don't know if I'm completely on board with this idea of he's a 40 catch guy. Well, what about last year when he caught 77 balls at 24 years old?
Yeah, Gadget has a bad sort of nomenclature to it, or sort of a bad tone to it, but he's got some Gadget to him. He carried the ball 41 times for 200 yards. That's part of the equation. Is he a do-it-all superstar wide receiver? No. And to Steve Smith's point, it's, Well, if he's just there to catch some balls short, like think about what he did against Atlanta. Some nice catches, some important moments, but he was like 4 for 26 in that game. That ain't worth $11 million per year. Now, if Smith's approaching it like, hey, $75 million, that ain't that. Well, you're right. That's a good thing they didn't pay him $75 million. They paid him less than half of that. But if the criticism of Samuel is he's never been this high upside guy that scares the hell out of defensive coordinators, again, it's a criticism that I could see. Again, I like the signing at the time. It's been a disaster this year, as we've talked about. But because it's that he's a complementary piece that can do a bunch of dynamic things. Maybe not go down the football field and just leave people in his wake, but as a runner, as a guy that you can run a lot of different action with, I think he's an asset that they are desperately missing.
You guys want to react to any of this? This was Steve Smith, the former Panther, played under Ron Rivera, was in the building in Carolina at the same time as Scott Turner. I'm not sure how he would have known much about Turner, the OC, right? Because he was well out of the building by then. But he's got takes because he was around Norv, I would guess.
Yeah, if he's, let's say he played in Norv's offense and now he sees all the mirror images and the same stuff, yeah. Maybe? I don't know.
800-636-1067 thinks Scott Turner is one-dimensional, thinks they overpaid for Curtis Samuel, although it might be because he thinks they paid $75
million. And more than twice what he actually got.
If they gave him $75 million, then they hella overpaid. But luckily, they only gave him $34 million. And it's not all guaranteed in football. 800-636-1067. You'll react to that on GND. Elliot Shore Parks will join us at 6. We'll go around the NFL at that time, get you ready for Week 11. Get started tonight with Thursday Night Football. Our buddy Michael Jenkins joins us less than 15 to preview the game. Remember, we got Caps tickets. Could be yours in 29 minutes. Got to be listening right here on The Fan. Danny, we were just talking about the former chef of Antonio Brown that came out to say that he doesn't think he's vaccinated.
That's
and
right.
He's got some screen grab of some text from his girlfriend or someone who says that they're not vaccinated or something. The lawyer for Antonio Brown is saying he is vaccinated and that story isn't true. So we'll see. This is now a he said kind of thing. But according to Josina Anderson reports, some people inside the Bucks organization question the intent of the chef who leaked the story. They think he's trying to get paid for the money that apparently Antonio Brown owes him, according to this guy. So sounds like it could be a messy situation. But again, my take is, it involves Antonio Brown. Nothing surprises me anymore. Like, you don't hear that about Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Which Bucks receiver is going to be in the news today for possibly this story where someone's saying they're not vaccinated and they might owe someone $10,000? I've got my money on that guy.
My 8-year-old son is bad at cleaning up his room.
Yeah.
I walk into the room and it's messy. See what I'm saying? Like, it sometimes happens that his room is messy. It's just weird that Antonio Brown's got the messy room right now.
You just heard from Steve Smith talking about Scott Turner, says his offense is one-dimensional. He only knows the one offense that his dad designed and says they shouldn't have ever signed Curtis Samuel anyway. What'd you guys think? Let's go to Greg and Lorton. Greg, how are you?
Hey, Grant. Hey, Danny. Thanks for taking the call. Pretty long-time listener. I grew up listening to you guys as my dad would, drive me around to sports practice and whatnot. Anyway,
that's awesome. That's our first ever. I grew up listening to you guys.
That hit me right
How
in the old.
How old are you, Greg?
I'm 19, almost 20. So,
wow.
When I was younger, I'd be driving or having a ride over to soccer practice and hear Grand Danny on The Fan. And, me and my dad are talking back and forth about the Redskins. Anyway, to get to my point, thanks for the shout out of the first time, when I was younger or growing up. Taylor Heinicke, I think you guys were being a little bit harsh, and I'm going to throw in the Steve Smith comments with this. But I'm going to start off with, I think you guys were being real harsh, saying if he was on the Rams, he's not Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford's been in the league since 2009. Taylor Heinicke's played in 10 games. Huge difference there. Like the one caller said, he's practically a rookie. He's also playing in that one-dimensional offense that Steve Smith was referencing. You don't see Scott Turner give him a lot of chances to make big plays. He ends up scrambling for the first down more than he probably needs to. And in my opinion, Terry McLaurin is underutilized. He's pretty much just given Taylor Heinicke tons of crossing routes. And and not a lot of big plays to create.
Definitely underutilized.
Appreciate you, buddy.
I mean, there's no doubt they should be using McLaurin more. You know, the point with what would the record be on the Rams, you asked it, so I can let you go on that. But I think you were just saying a caller had basically said they don't have enough around him. And your point is, if he was on one of the most talented teams in the league, would they be 7-3?
And that was the only point there. It was just not to compare the two. I'm aware of the experience differential and the reps and everything else. But the idea, the only reason that we're seeing this from Heinicke is he doesn't have great weapons around him. My point is absolutely a factor, not discounting that. And then the next sentence is, he still ain't that great.
28 years old, and he's been in the league since 2015. That's 6 years. 7 seasons, basically, of in and out of buildings. Minnesota for 3 of them, New England with Brady and Belichick for a cup of coffee, Houston, Carolina, Washington, played in the XFL. I mean, if your point is he's basically a rookie because he's played in 10 games or what have you, then you don't think that standing on the sideline is beneficial in any way. You don't think that being in the building, learning from coaches every single day, being in meetings is beneficial. And we talk about this with rookies all the time.
Sure.
Do you have to be on the field? So Trey Lance right now might as well just still be at a Dakota State to be named later because he's just standing around. I disagree with that.
Yeah, if Chase Daniel became the starter here tomorrow, would you go, well, he's just a rookie.
Yeah.
He's been in the league for a decade.
Right.
You know?
Longer. I mean, 15 years as a backup. But he probably hasn't started 16 games yet, so he's technically a rookie. No, you're 28. You'll be 29 this offseason, and you've been in the league since 2015. And that's just in football terms. I'm trying to think of what would have happened. Like, that was the first year Kirk Cousins was the quarterback of this team, just to give you a little sample. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And he's been in and out of complexes around the league since then, learning ball and practicing and getting reps. Tim's in Culpeper. What's up, Tim? What'd you think of what Steve Smith had to say?
You know, it was funny. I joined that segment about halfway into it, so I didn't really hear who said the comment initially.
It was Steve Smith.
And then when you guys were talking about, when you said Smith said it, I can't help but think, okay, I have to evaluate the source for the comment. And I don't think Steve Smith is a good source for understanding, you know, the situation that the Redskins are in, or the Washington football team, sorry, and the situation of picking up Samuels. I think there's a little Steve Smith self-promotion, maybe a little jealousy. But, you know, look who Steve Smith had as a quarterback when he was at Carolina. And, you know, that situation doesn't exist here. So Smith's comment, I think, is interesting in that I just don't put a lot of weight in it. I really don't.
I actually think that's really fair.
Yeah.
And I totally always say evaluate the source. I don't remember who we were talking about earlier. Linnell and I were talking a few minutes ago in one of the breaks about, yeah, but who said it? Oh, well, you know, it might have even been the Chef AB thing. I think that's what we were talking about, was he's like, this chef probably just, he wants his money and he's throwing AB under the bus. I'm like, that's possible. But you know who can be a decent character witness sometimes? The person getting a divorce from someone who actually knows a lot of stuff about that person. Like, you could just dismiss everything they say because they're getting divorced, they hate their guts. But they could still tell you a lot about, there's still information that they have about someone. So I think it goes both ways. But it did sound to me like, well, Steve Smith is not a huge fan of that Carolina outfit.
No.
That's what it sounded like to me.
Yeah, of that staff and everybody else and the way it ended on Saturday.
Seemed like him and Rivera, while they go back and forth a little bit, maybe have a decent relationship, it sounds like. Maybe he likes him more, I would say, than the Curtis Samuel factor that mm-hmm. the Scott Turner audio we're playing. Let's go to Steve Beltsville on Grant and Danny. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, as a Skins fan, obviously disappointed in the way things have worked so far for Curtis Samuel. But Steve Smith, he can't come on the air and throw out numbers that aren't even close.
Yeah.
Do a little research. I was so pissed off by hearing that. I would have thought that Curtis Samuel made $75 million if you had not told me otherwise. So he's putting out bad information, bad journalism, whatever you want to call him, just ticked me off to no end, man. I just had to call him and let that go.
Well, that was my point to Danny when we first were talking about the cut. I was like, well, if he actually thinks they paid him $70+ million, no wonder why he's so
taken aback.
Yeah, I'd be annoyed too. Curtis Samuel's so overpaid. He thinks he got a $70-some million contract.
Uh-huh. I don't know. I mean, this is such a complicated thing because if you just take those things that Steve Smith got wrong, then it's, you almost like can't even talk about the actual points and the criticisms, which I do. I can see whether I agree or not is irrelevant. It's not germane. What is, hey, is Scott Turner really the guy? Is it one dimensional? Can he not, you know, go to the strength of his players? Or are we sure he's the right dude? Et cetera, et cetera. Reasonable questions that I think everybody can have. But if we're caught up on those details and we just sort of throw it all out, then I'm not sure how to handle it.
I hope he's still studying and updating his file now as an analyst, because he was around Scott Turner, I think, last, like, close to 10 years ago.
2013, I think.
Whatever. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Next, Michael Jenkins gets us ready for Thursday Night Football. Grant and Danny welcoming you back on the Fan in D.C. and in Richmond. We are taking you up to 6:30 live and local on 106.7 The Fan all over Washington, D.C. Remember to download the Odyssey app. You can take us with you wherever you go. On the line right now, the host of the Daily Tip, our Odyssey Sports Insider, Michael Jenkins. Insider calls are presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights these sports books don't want you to see. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. Jenks, we got ourselves a fun Thursday night matchup tonight. The New England Patriots have been soaring. The Atlanta Falcons in the last 2 weeks have been great once and terrible once. Not really sure who the real Falcons are. Should be an entertaining game.
Yeah, it's tough to figure that out. Now this line has just shot up like a rocket. So it's gone from 4 to 6.5 to 7 in some places. So this is tough because I never like putting my money on bad teams like the Jags or the Dolphins or the Jets or the Falcons or another bad team. But I do think, at least for me, if you're going to bet in this spot, that this line has gone up so much that the Falcons are probably the right side, which I hate saying because it's gross to bet on Atlanta. It's probably a stay away, or I would take the value on Atlanta. I know it sounds crazy, but in these primetime games, these dogs have been really profitable. And we saw it last week with the Fins and the Ravens, and everyone was on Baltimore. Miami won outright. So, yeah, New England could blow them out, but I actually would put money on the Falcons at +6.5, +7.
Who can you count on right now? I mean, even the teams that we think are really good with good records, you know, say all of a sudden the Rams, 2 straight weeks, they've been terrible. You mentioned the Ravens last week. Who can we count on week in and week out, Michael?
God, I don't think anybody can. We, I feel like maybe it's the Bills, that maybe they're the best overall team. But then, you know, you look back a couple weeks ago and they lost outright to the Jags. So I think I would go with the Bills just because I think they've been the most consistent and they have that defense, which is top five. They can score. They're the best, most well-rounded team. But I also think that's what makes the NFL this season so fascinating, is that you can make a case for a lot of teams being the best team or having the best chance to win it all. Look at Tampa, what happened in Washington. You could have maybe said it was the Bucs, and then they lay an egg. So I don't know who it is right now, but if I had to pick one, I would think it's Buffalo.
I also think it seems like there is some overreaction for a lot of people to some of these midseason clunkers. I mean, this is kind of what happens, right? You get off to the start that you are comfortable with, you're 6-2, 7-2, whatever. You lay an egg here and there. And then the goal is to be ready to go come the playoffs if you're Dallas, Tampa, the LA Rams. Like, those teams are all going to be there. Aren't we overreacting a little bit to some of the bumps in the road that are inevitable?
Oh, absolutely. That's just part of the NFL. It's just that there's such a discrepancy now between the really good teams and the really bad teams, that these upsets that normally happen each and every NFL season, I mean, you guys know how it works. You see it every year in the NFL. That's why they say any given Sunday. But this time around, that gulf is so big that when we do see an upset, which in any other year would be like, yeah, well, you know, it's the NFL, we think, oh my God, the sky is falling, the Bills lost, or I can't believe the Titans lost to the Jets, or whatever week it is. But ultimately, it's just an overreaction, because even last year with the Bucs, for example, it wasn't until after their bye week until they really went on that run. People forget that midway last year, remember Tom Brady was putting up the 4 with his fingers, and people thought, oh, the game's passed Tom Brady by. He didn't realize that, you know, that it was fourth down. He had no idea. Well, he knew exactly what he was doing, but that just goes to show that that's where we were at this point last year, and now the Bucs are the defending Super Bowl champions. So a lot can change, and there is a lot of overreaction this time of year.
So here in Washington, right, looking at this Carolina matchup, if it was just two teams playing, Washington with their biggest win of the season this past week against Tampa Bay that nobody thought, gives them a chance to have some relevance later on. Whether they do or don't is up for debate. Carolina, 5-5 in the postseason. That alone, intriguing game. Then you add in Ron Rivera and like 900 staff members going back down to Charlotte where they all have homes. Then you add in this return of Cam Newton. Like, it's a type of script that would get rejected in Hollywood, Jenks. It's so much backdrop, it's just dripping with intrigue. What are your thoughts?
Man, you're so right. It's one of the most fascinating games on the schedule. Just forget about records for a second, but if you look at the narrative, I don't know why you would want to watch this game. And even point spread-wise, it's 3, 3.5, depending on where you get it. So even Vegas believes it's going to be a field goal game. I think if you're looking at it beyond the narratives just a little bit, the one guy we're not talking about is Christian McCaffrey. You know there's a lot of narratives going in. We're talking about Ron Rivera, and we're talking about the staff going back, and we're talking about Cam, and we forget that Christian McCaffrey is in that Panthers backfield. So I don't know if you can call Christian McCaffrey an X factor, but he is in the sense that he seems to be a guy that nobody's talking about this week, and certainly that's something you want to take into account if you're thinking about betting this game.
Jenks, it looks like in the NFC, there's going to be a couple of wild card spots won by teams that might not be great. I mean, the last wild card might even be by an 8 or 9 win team. If you look at the teams that are all vying for those spots, right now New Orleans has one of them, but Carolina, Atlanta playing tonight, Minnesota, San Francisco. Which of those teams do you think separates itself before the end of the season? Who ends up making the playoffs out of that group?
God, this is going to sound like an overreaction. We just talked about overreactions, but it might just be the Niners. Just because if you look at the rest of their schedule, and I know they're in the toughest division in football, I think they have the schedule coming up where they could make a run, particularly because if you look at their schedule, okay, they get the Jags. They could beat the Jags. Then they host the Vikings. That's a beatable team. They go to the Seahawks. Seahawks are struggling this year. Then they visit the Bengals and Falcons, Titans, Texans, and Rams again. So overall, that's not the most difficult schedule. And remember, the Niners have been really, really banged up. So they're just now getting healthier again to the point where they're not necessarily the team that we thought they were going to be before the season, but certainly a team based on talent alone, based on the fact that they're getting healthier, and based on the fact that their schedule is kind in the second half of the season that could slip into one of those spots and maybe cause some damage.
Jenks, you have to risk the entire Jenkins fortune, family fortune, all the trust funds and everything else that you have, okay? On the order of finish in the AFC North. Predict it.
Oh, God, the AFC North. Oh, God, I got to think about this for a second. This is a good one, Danny. I would say I'm going to go Ravens. I know they look so bad, but I have to believe it's – I think it's Ravens. Oh, God. Then you're killing me. This is so tough. I'm going to go Ravens, Steelers, Browns, Bengals. I think I still think you have to believe in Baltimore because they're the most talented and it's not close. And then I just believe in the Steelers because of Mike Tomlin, and he continues to win despite the fact that he shouldn't be winning with all these old guys, at least Big Ben, on his team. And I think maybe the Browns and Bengals switch places just because of talent, and the Bengals are just – maybe they just need an extra – man or two to step it up and help that team. But it's really close. I guess I would lean with the Ravens, but they have the worst secondary in the NFL, so it's really hard to back any of those teams.
Thank you, Jenks. We appreciate you, bro.
Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
That was the host of the Daily Tip, Odyssey Sports Insider Michael Jenkins, joins us every Thursday as we wind the show down ahead of Thursday Night Football. We're Grant and Danny taking you up to 6:30 tonight on The Fan. We'll continue to look ahead to Week 11 in the NFL next. Stretch run of Grant and Danny on The Fan. We told you we'd give away one more pair of Caps tickets to kick off the final half hour of the show. So, right now, caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You got to name one of the bands whose song we played earlier today when we played a game.
Yes. Does Grant know the band? We played several of them, and Darius has a list. I've checked them all off on that piece of paper, Ryan, so any of those answers will be acceptable at 800-636-1067.
You're taking a friend, a loved one, one of your kids, whatever. Two of you are going to the Capitals game against Montreal, Capital One Arena, Wednesday, November 24th, 2021, the day before Thanksgiving. See Ovi and the Caps this season at the arena. Single game tickets, group tickets, partial plans are all on sale. For more information on how to purchase tickets, visit washcaps.com/tickets and listen to the Caps all season long right here on The Fan. We are pleased right now to go to the BetQL guest hotline to bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today by visiting BetQL.com. Get a little preview of Week 11 in the NFL that starts tonight. Elliott Shore Parks, he's based in Philly, WIP in Philadelphia, but also covers the National Football League for us at Odyssey. Elliott, thanks for the time. How are you?
Doing good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Always appreciate the time, man. Are there any great teams?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, look, the answer to that is probably no. I think if we talked a few weeks ago, I would have said the Rams were a great team, but you look at what just happened to them. They seem to be spiraling. I'm sure you guys are well aware of what happened to the Buccaneers last week. So as you go around, I mean, look, the Titans keep winning, but I think being skeptical of them is fair. You know, without Derrick Henry, how long can they really keep it up? And when Derrick Henry does come back, is he going to be 100%? Are they really going to count on a, you know, mishmash backfield and Ryan Tannehill to lead them in the playoffs? So as I look around, yeah, I think there's some very good teams, but I don't think there's, you know, even one or two that you would point to and go, okay, yeah, they're the heavy favorites to go to the Super Bowl or win it.
Going all the way back to the start of October for Belichick's Patriots, they lose to the Bucs in a game where they hit an upright in the rain. They mm-hmm. beat the Texans. They lose in overtime to the Cowboys. Then they hang 54 on the Jets. They top the Chargers. They pummel the Panthers, and they just hung 45 on the Browns. They play tonight against the Falcons in primetime. Are you buying in on New England as a legitimate playoff team right now?
I'm not. No. No, I think they've been impressive. And I certainly think Mac Jones is showing that he can be the quarterback of the future. I mean, I was talking to some people about this today, and if there's a redraft, does Mac Jones go number one overall? I mean, I think that's how good he's been so far this season. But I still just have some skepticism about a rookie quarterback heading into the playoffs. As good as Mac Jones is, you know, I just think as a rookie, first time through the postseason, he's going to go against, you know, a Patrick Mahomes. He's going to go against a Lamar Jackson potentially in the playoff matchups. And I just don't know if he can outduel them. Now, in addition to that, their skill position players, I think, are fine. I don't know if they're a difference maker. So I like the Patriots. I think next year is the year you could certainly point to them. Maybe Belichick gets his revenge on Tom Brady and wins another Super Bowl, or at least gets there. But this year I would have some skepticism of them making a deep run into the postseason.
Elliott, there are a handful of teams that are around that 5-5, 5-4 mark. Any one of those, in your opinion, that's going to make some noise here before season's end?
It's a great question. I mean, look, I think that you can look at any one of those teams and say that they can make a push because of what we just talked about. There's such parity right now in the league. So, yeah, I'm of course, blanking right now on a 5-4 team. But I think that, there's great parity right now, and I think that any of them could make a run.
I'm going to give you some of the teams in the NFC in that mix. You tell me a team that you could see getting hot, because someone's going to probably finish 9-8 and make the playoffs. But the conference kind of starts right now with New Orleans in the sixth spot. The seventh spot as of this moment is 500 Carolina. The teams behind them are clubs like Minnesota at 4-5.
Atlanta
tonight, 4-5. The 49ers got themselves in, even the Eagles, who you know well. Any of those teams you think playoff caliber?
Well, I think the Saints could be. I mean, I think obviously when Jameis Winston went down, you know, everyone kind of wrote them off. And I think banking on Trevor Siemian is still a risky proposition. But you look at what they've done with him at quarterback. They beat the Buccaneers. They almost beat the Titans. And then, you know, a good test from this week in Philadelphia. I think of all the teams you mentioned, Atlanta will get a look at tonight. I'm still skeptical they're going to be able to, you know, hold it up over a full season. Cam Newton in Carolina is certainly a wild card. We'll see if he starts this Sunday. Against Washington, it looks like it's trending that way. And maybe he can be the spark they need to get going after kind of a, you know, certainly a midseason swoon. The Eagles are an interesting team, though, because you look at their remaining schedule, and they could be favored in all those games, which is wild for a team that's currently 4-6. You know, they have the Washington twice. They have the Giants twice. They have the Jets. They have the Cowboys, potentially, where they're going to be resting their starters. So of those two teams, if I had to pick which are going to qualify for the postseason, I would pick the Saints, and then maybe the Eagles, just off the fact that they have such an easy schedule. I don't think they're the best team of those groups, but I do think they have a really good chance of qualifying.
So they're at the top of the NFC. Three of the five best teams lost this past weekend, right? The Rams, and now two straight for them. Tampa, two straight for them as well. And Arizona lost this past weekend too. Obviously, you know, different circumstances with backup quarterback, but
right.
Still, they didn't look the part. They got the doors blown off there. Again, who's the class of the NFC? And you know, is it just going to be something that we can't quite figure out until, you know, week 16 or 17 or even 18 now, which I'm still not used to saying?
Yeah, look, I don't think any team is a heavy favorite now, but if I had to pick the class of the NFC, I would probably pick the Cowboys. I think on both sides of the ball, they just have, not the most talent, because obviously we've seen what the Rams have done, and certainly the Buccaneers are talented as well. But when you look at the receivers they have, the quarterback play with how well Dak is playing, and their defense has really taken a step forward this year under Dan Quinn. And the other thing is they have a Super Bowl winning head coach. I know the Buccaneers do as well, but I think Mike McCarthy, now you're seeing the benefits of hiring him. So if I had to pick a team at the top of the NFC as a favorite at this point, and again, I think they're all pretty even, I think the Cowboys are the team to watch.
I want to tap into the expertise of Elliot Shore Parks, who's with us here on Grant and Danny, based in Philly. I've gotten to watch a little bit of the Eagles. Haven't had to study them closely yet. Obviously, Washington doesn't play them till late in the year. But of the nine games they've played, or 10, whatever it is, four of those games, Jalen Hurts has completed 12 or fewer passes.
Yeah.
When I look at next-gen stats, a lot of it is one side of the field, by the way. Like more than any other quarterback in the league, it's baffling. Have we seen enough to know if this guy is the guy or not? Again, Philly right now, are they doing the same thing we're doing with Heinicke? I know it's different. He was a second-round pick. But where they're like week to week, like, oh, he could be. Or I mean, we kind of know Heinicke's the backup, and we're just waiting to see what they do next. Is that the same thing with Hurts? They drafted him in the second round, which seems crazy, but they did.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, I think to your point, it's week to week with him. I think if we would have had this conversation a week ago coming off the loss to the Chargers where he missed, essentially two wide-open touchdowns, I would have told you he has, almost no chance of being the starter next year. Then he goes to Denver. He throws two touchdowns in the first half. He should have had a third if one wasn't dropped. And I think the arrow is pointing up on him. What's interesting about Jalen Hurts is he has everything you want in a quarterback besides a special arm. And so I think he's going to be a great kind of study in terms of, how much does a special arm matter? You look at the arm of Zach Wilson in New York, he has a special arm, but he's been a disaster. Jalen, at the very least, has not been a disaster. He's smart with the ball. He's a very dangerous runner on the ground, and he has a good enough arm. But yeah, to the same thing about Heinicke. I mean, they're week to week with him at this point, but they have three first round picks and a ton of cap space this offseason. So I think that in that regard, Hurts is really fighting an uphill battle to be the guy next year.
Elliot Shore Parks with us here on Grant and Danny. You mentioned the rookie quarterbacks. Mac Jones, take him out of the best situation. He's just in the perfect nest, and he's playing well, thriving. The other rookies, though, are not. I hate the situation Justin Fields is in with a coach that's basically a dead man walking. You mentioned Zach Wilson struggling with the Jets. Trevor Lawrence and the Jags just kind of stink on ice. And Trey Lance probably needs a couple redshirt years. I'm exaggerating a little bit, obviously. But just who of those guys is going to emerge? Who turns it around? Or are they just doomed because they're there in bad spots?
Yeah, I mean, I think nowadays it's so tough for a quarterback to go into these bad situations and succeed. I've been covering the league for 10 years now. And one thing I think I've learned more than anything is, a quarterback has to be really, really special to go into those situations and turn it around. I mean, Jacksonville's been a dumpster fire for years. Trevor Lawrence was one of, if not, an Andrew Luck type prospect, certainly up there in terms of how certain people were he'd be good. And you're right, he's in a really tough spot. If I had to pick the two that I think have the best chance, obviously outside of Mac Jones, I think you look at Trey Lance in San Francisco just because he does have, I don't know if he's an elite level head coach, but he certainly is in the discussion of a Kyle Shanahan there. So you feel good about that. And then I think Justin Fields, I just think his ability to create on the run, his ability to make plays when things break down, that's especially helpful when you have head coach like Matt Nagy, when often the plays he calls do break down. So if they do move on from Nagy, I think Justin Fields would have a chance to succeed. But Trey Lance is probably the top one just because he's in such a good spot with that head coach.
Two teams in the NFC that I think don't get talked about enough as legitimate and viable Super Bowl threats are Dallas and Green Bay. And I say that because I think both of those teams are portable, Elliot. Like, you can run to win. You can throw to win. The Aaron Jones loss for the Packers could be massive, though. I mean, what do you think of those two teams as contenders? And do you think one or both are Super Bowl caliber?
Yeah, so I do believe Dallas is, my favorite team, at least, to come out of the NFC. As I mentioned, I think they have great skill position players. Dak's playing at a high level. Their defense has turned it around. Micah Parsons has proven to be a great pick there in the first round. And we've all seen what Trayvon Diggs can do as a playmaker in the secondary. So I do really like the Cowboys. The Packers, though, if you have Aaron Rodgers, you have a chance, flat out, right? And I think that especially with everything that he just went through, it'll be interesting to see if he, you know, if he kind of turns that into a tour where he's going to just go and try to, you know, prove to people, I don't want to say his haters, but to people, for everything he went through wrong. So I think the Packers, as you mentioned, are portable. You know, they got lucky the fact that Aaron Jones did not suffer a major injury. And I think going to Lambeau is a tough place to play, and then they won't be afraid to travel either. You saw what they went when they went to Arizona, they won. And I think it's going to be tough for teams to go into Lambeau if they need to. So, yeah, certainly both are contenders in a wide-open NFC.
Elliot, Kansas City, they got woodshedded by Tennessee. I mean, that was disgusting and bad, and that was their low point. But they've won 4 out of 5, and their defense has given up points in the teens. Granted, they didn't play great offenses, and they got the benefit of, you know, of the most – you know, heavily attention to backup quarterback in the history of mankind and Bryce Love. But still, it's been pretty impressive what they've done here lately. Do we kind of kick dirt on their grave a little bit too soon?
Oh, I think absolutely. Look, Patrick Mahomes was struggling for a stretch, or at least, you know, struggling for him. And then, of course, the defense was struggling. But this is a team that's just loaded with talent. And there's Andy Reid as their head coach. I mean, I got a chance to cover Andy for the later part of his years here in Philadelphia. And he's a Hall of Fame coach. And when you have that level play caller, that level head coach in the sidelines, you're going to even things out. Andy Reid's a coach that throughout his career has traditionally done much better in October and early November than he has early on in the seasons. I think sometimes it takes him a little bit of time to turn things around. But, yeah, you're right. You look at them now, that performance they had in Las Vegas last week, they went from last place to first place, and they're once again right up there. So, I think we definitely kicked dirt on their grave a little prematurely, and maybe that's a lesson to all of us that when Patrick Mahomes is your quarterback, it really doesn't matter how you look for September.
Elliot Shore Parks, WIP in Philadelphia, and our Odyssey NFL insider. Thank you. We appreciate it, buddy.
Yep, sounds good. Talk to you guys.
Thanks, Elliot.
Great info. We appreciate you. Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Good information, good info from him. High on the Cowboys like I am, and I got no problem admitting it. I think they are absolutely a Super Bowl contender.
100%. To me, it was always about their defense. Not being great, good enough. And it's absolutely good enough with Parsons and Diggs on the back end.
I want to know who you're picking Thursday Night Football here in a moment. I want to remind people about Odyssey's Rocket Mortgage Pick'em 2021. I'm participating in this with a bunch of hosts from around the country. There's $1,000 up for grabs for listeners every single week with the Rocket Mortgage Pro Football Pick'em. You sign up right now by texting 20357. That's 20357. It's free. You pick the winner of each week's games. This isn't point spreads or lineups or gambling or anything like that. Totally free to enter. Really cool opportunity to try to win some cash. You can sign up by texting 20357. You got to text the word picks to 20357. Rocket Mortgage, Pro Football Pick'em. I'm giving away money each week and a big pot at the end of the season. Tonight, I think the Patriots win the game. I'm sure you do as well. Mm-hmm. So let's look at that spread, -6.5. It's a pretty big line. The Falcons are frisky against the spread. They normally can play teams close. Normally what happens is a team gets blown out like they did last week,
yep,
and we overcorrect. And we expect, oh, well, the Falcons just scored 3 points. They lost by 40. They're terrible. The line normally reflects how bad a team was, and that's how odds makers make their money. I do kind of have a sneaky suspicion the Patriots just run the ball all over them and win by more than 7 tonight. So I would probably go New England to cover, but I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, I do too. And it's this, Thursday night equalizes things. We see weird things last week, you know, see Miami beating Baltimore, et cetera. Short rest and the like. Damian Harris comes back. Ramondre Stevenson was awesome this past week in the backfield for the Patriots. They are rolling right now. Defensively, they've been terrific. Only 13 points allowed to the Jets, 6 points to the Panthers, 7 points to the Browns. Physical domination. They're playing well on both sides of the football. I think they do that again tonight. So I think they win. I think they cover. I think they're just pushing Atlanta around at this point. But again, it's Thursday night. It's weird stuff. Atlanta's probably not as bad as we saw them this past week.
I want to go back to something Logan Paulson said today and play this for you guys. And I want to remind everyone that you can go back and listen to our entire interview with Logan. He was sensational as always. Broke down the film from the Tampa win and looking ahead to Carolina with all the film he's crunched and watched of the Panthers this year. But he talked about what you can expect from the Panthers offense. And if he was the defensive coordinator, Jack Del Rio, getting his team ready, what he would be saying Washington should prepare for. This is what Logan said about this Sunday's game in Charlotte.
If I'm the Washington football team, I'm getting ready for Cam Newton to run 12 to 15 quarterback powers in this game, 5 to 10 zone reads with Christian McCaffrey, lots of bubble screens, lots of screens to the running back, and then take the occasional shot downfield. So if I'm telling these linebackers, these defensive linemen, I'm like, put your mouthpiece in, put your neck roll on, because he's not going to beat. Let's make him beat us with his arm, because right now he has not shown a consistent ability to do that in, you know, almost a year of football. So that's what I'm kind of looking at, and if I'm Jack Del Rio, that's what I'm pointing to here.
And I think that's even being friendly, saying just a year of football since he's made plays with his arm. But the point remains, and I think he's on it. I mean, he completed 3 passes for 8 yards this week, and they're going to name him the starting quarterback. He's had shoulder problems. If you can stop the read option from killing you, if you can keep Cam Newton from rushing for 60 yards or 70 yards or something like that, you know, enough yards where he's extending drives and getting them into field goal range and making back-breaking plays, if the Panthers actually have to throw the ball, it's going to be a long day for their offense. Now, I kind of like Washington's defense against Carolina's offense. It's why I think they have a really good chance to win. Carolina's defense, though, is going to make life hard on Taylor Heinicke. They're great. So this is one of those games where I think if someone gets to 23, they win the football game. But I'm with Logan completely. This is a heavy read option, quarterback run, power, looking like old school high school football, direct snap. We're going left. We're going right. I think it's going to be a lot of that.
To me, there are a couple keys. Number one, Landon Collins. I think this is a Landon Collins game. And what I mean is this new linebacker, hybrid safety, whatever you want to call this thing, you don't have to worry about things going over your head. There are a couple guys who will deal with DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, if they try to go down the field, whatever. But I'm basically playing, you know, off the football, or excuse me, like I'm playing up tight. Maybe one guy deep, let's have that go. But everybody else is down in front, downhill, downhill, downhill. I think Collins is going to have to tackle Christian McCaffrey a dozen times, maybe more. I think you're going to have to, you know, make sure he hits Cam Newton a few times. The first guy that hits Cam Newton is probably not bringing him down. That dude is still a big physical freak. Grab, hold on, let the, you know, you got a gang tackle, swarm to the football. I think there's nothing going over the top. They may try to soften you up, but stick to your plan. You get beat once like you did last week where Mike Evans got you. You say, okay, good play. You're not doing that consistently to me. I think if you press, get upfield, a lot of blitzes, maybe just guess right in some of these run lanes where it's going to happen. You can put them in bad down and distance. You can have your way.
I want James Smith-Williams and Casey Tuhill to just play team ball. For all of the talk about Chase Young over the last several weeks, how many times did we talk about it sounded like, well, he was freelancing or maybe doing something the coaches didn't like. Ron Rivera came out and questioned what he was doing and why aren't you taking on a chipper and stay where you're supposed to be. If you're James Smith-Williams, you're Casey Tuhill, that should be your game.
Yeah, go to school on that.
So let's see. Okay, well, now you get what you want if you're a coach. Guys are going to be where they're supposed to be. Supposedly that was a problem. Let's find out what it looks like. And let's find out what we learned today on Grant and Danny. What we learned, driven by your local Honda dealer, racing for a great deal on the Honda of your dreams during the Honda Dream Garage event. Take advantage of the savings and see your local Honda dealer today.
I learned that in the mind of my wonderful friend and co-host Grant Paulson, the beginning of Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train sounds a lot like Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle. I didn't know that, but through your lens, through your filter, you can hear those two things. I can't hear them. A lot of people can't hear them. You heard it.
I don't even know which one this is right now.
Which one is it?
Is this the same one you played earlier?
Are you asking me or telling me?
Then it's Ozzy. This is Ozzy.
Are you sure?
Yeah, same one you played earlier.
Which one's this?
This is Guns N' Roses.
You know.
Yeah.
Seal's Kiss from a Rose is the same as Poison's Every Rose Has Its Thorn.
I'm a Guns N' Roses guy, as you know.
Big fan.
Love Guns N' Roses.
Favorite Guns N' Roses album?
Locked and Loaded.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Love that.
That's a great one.
Locked, Loaded, and Thorny. Isn't that is that an album?
I don't know.
If it wasn't, it should have been. That's a silly name.
That sounds like a hair metal album, by the way.
Yeah. Locked, Loaded, and All Thorned Up. That's a Guns N' Roses album. Should have been. I learned today that if you don't bet on me to know music and you don't win tickets, you got to kick yourself all the way back to the drawing board going, I should have sided with my pal GP.
You had run round where you got both.
I did.
Didn't you?
I did. poor guy. He went with me the first time, not the second time. What are you thinking? I actually think today was my worst performance ever. I have to go back. I think I was like maybe 3 for 10 or 2 for 11.
I think it was 2 for 10.
It was really bad.
It sound right, Darius?
Did your wife text you during it? Because usually she texts you during
times. Lots of texts. She got whatever the band was that I said I had never heard of is apparently her favorite band.
Led Zeppelin. You said they stink and they're overrated.
Yeah. Let me read some of these. Lil Jon and the East Side Boys. I don't know what that was about. You just sang this to me this morning. That was Blink 182. I did sing that through it today.
There you go.
Thank goodness. You've never gotten a Led Zeppelin song. You're terrible. My favorite band. I don't know which one that was. Maybe that's Led Zeppelin.
Maybe Led Zeppelin, yeah.
I don't think she likes Led Zeppelin.
You should ask your wife who her favorite band is.
I feel like
you're 3 of 11, by the way. 3 of 11.
3 11's a band.
There you go. Well, 3 out of 11, not 3 11.
3 11 is a band.
3 11 is a band. They are a band, yes. They ask you to come original.
I think 3 out of 11 is my worst performance ever on Name the Song.
I think that's about average.
Name the band or whatever we
think that's the back of your baseball card.
Handsome is up next with Overtime, so make sure you're listening to the good-smelling Handsome, who's going to host the show next. It is Nick Ashew, right? I'm not getting fired? All right, good. Nick Ashew's up next. Let's just make sure. If it's not Nick Ashew, I thought it was. That's why I said handsome. So I don't. If it's somebody else, please don't fire me.
Sure, they're handsome too.
Two kids at home.
I guess, yeah.
So I know we're allowed to do that with Nick. I don't know what the rules are for anybody else. I desperately,
we're grandfathered in with Nick somehow.
I have a 2-year-old daughter. She's adorable. All I want to do is keep my job. So I should just, let me just go back to the drawing board. Nick Ashew's up next.
Nick is up next.
And if he's not, I thought it was Nick. That's the most important thing to take away. Tomorrow we're scouting the opponent. That'll be fun.
Yes.
Bryce Harper just won MVP, so I'm pissed about that.
Oh, thank goodness. That's fun.
One day Juan Soto will win it for another team. Grant and Danny saying so long. Thanks for listening.
That one hurt.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.